You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoff, and we're talking about herbal medicine and natural self-care. The book, Be Your Own Shaman, A Field Guide to Utilize 94 of the World's Most Healing Plants. It's a beautiful book. It's a book that I think you'll want in your library, and it's a great reference book because if you want the lowdown on some of the most popular herbs, you can get it here. Also, it takes kind of a functional approach because it's broken down into chapters which address common problems. There are herbs for relaxation and stress. There are herbs to support brain health. There are herbs for blood sugar control and digestive health and so on. So what's interesting, too, is that in the book, you use some of the traditional terms, and I think these are wonderful terms. These terms have been sort of lost to modern medical science. But in addition to the word adaptogen, words like alteratives, cholagogue, emmenagogue, and demulcent appear with great frequency in herbal literature. So it's interesting because these words have practical application, but we tend to have bypassed them in our rush to make progress in medicine. So, you know, maybe you can talk a little bit about some of these terms. I really like the idea of things like cholagogues, some things that actually promote, I guess it's the flow of bile, is it not?
Right. Yeah. So when I was in high school, I was a senior, it was 1979, my dad published a book. So it was called From the Shepherd's Purse. And
remember that book. Yes. Yeah. Wait a minute. So what year was that published?
1979.
Because that's perfect, because that's when I was entering this field. And I was in medical school, but I was pre-med in medical school. But at the same time, I was studying this, outside. And there were very few resources then. And I have a vague recollection of that being one of the go-to books on the subject. But it was also, kind of written in traditional language. It was, right?
Yes. Yes. So there's 48 plants in this book. Mm-hmm. When my dad wrote it, the terms he used that you were just talking about, when I updated his book and doubled the content, this is a legacy letter of love for my dad, redoing his book and changing the formatting and doubling the content. But I wanted to really honor the beautiful tradition of plant medicine and all of the people who came before and all the work they did, including my dad. So I use these words. And of course, you can look back in the glossary and you can look up what any of these terms mean. But this is a shout out to the deep, rich history of herbal medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason I did use those terms.
Which actually was the go-to alternative on the frontier. But also a much preferable alternative to the excesses of what was then termed, mainstream medicine or heroic medicine. In the day, you really took your life in your hands. If you went to a, quote, doctor, you would do much better with the local medicine lady or the local herbal practitioner. Mm. Yeah, very much
it's
so.
It's true. Yeah, I think it feels like we talked about before we started recording, it feels like there's a full circle happening. where we do need to use heroic medicine to save our lives. I mean, 2 years ago, I had a full knee replacement because I had a horrible water ski accident, and I had to have a knee replacement. And
thank God for modern medicine. Yeah, you got a new lease on life. Otherwise, you'd be limping around like Chester in Gunsmoke for the rest of your life. Yeah,
1,000%. So I am a fan of what modern medicine does for our lives as humans and all the technology that we just need to take responsibility for our health, and we need to be courageous, and we need to be willing to research when it comes to using natural medicine.
So the intent of the book, to some extent, is to empower people to take care of themselves. Is that feasible with a minimal understanding of herbs? Are there self-care guidelines in the book where, you know, if you have a fever, for example, you can brew a concoction that's going to relieve your distress? Or does it require finding a qualified herbal practitioner to get guidance?
You know, the position I'm taking on this is I really want to empower people. I want people to say, okay, I have a fever. Okay, I have a cold. I have a skin wound that I can tell. You know, I at this point feel so empowered. I don't really go to the doctor. I had to actually find a doctor to give me an EKG to get my knee replaced because I don't even have a doctor.
Right.
And I'm not against doctors, but I know how, like, if there's a fever, if there's any type of infection, and I can tell the difference between this one I need to go to the doctor for. But I don't think most lay people are
there. I think it's important to have health literacy, to know when to hold and know when to fold, because there are sometimes you can be in a state of denial sometimes about a serious problem. So that, I think there's a balancing act there.
Yes.
Specifically, so if you have a cold, you know, I had, you know, a few weeks back, I had kind of this long protracted thing, you know, where I had the nasal congestion for 3 or 4 days, but, you know, I just felt a little out of it for, you know, a week or two afterwards. I didn't bother testing for COVID because I don't do that anymore. Difference doesn't make. But it might have been, or it might have just been just, you know, a wicked, you know, spring transition kind of thing. I think I caught it on a trip to Las Vegas in a crowded plane. Do you have a go-to for colds and, you know, respiratory infections?
Yeah, 100%. One of my favorites for respiratory is OSHA root.
Oh.
OSHA root, it has an affinity for lung tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, that's something. I also love lobelia, and I love mullein for lung. And then
mullein is for coughs or for lung congestion. Yeah.
Yes. So so mullein, OSHA is probably my first go-to, but I actually do a little blend of several different things in a lung specific formula that it's tincture form. So you can literally feel your lungs open up on one dose of it, which is nice. The nice thing about a tincture is it absorbs very quickly, and in an alcohol bath, it goes right to the bloodstream, and you can literally, and especially in the case when you're taking OSHA and also peppermint, a little bit of peppermint is really good for lung health too. So
does it always have to be extracted in an alcohol base? Because there's some people who are, you know, for one reason or another, they're really, really concerned about any exposure to alcohol. Maybe they're in, you know, in recovery or something. And they're concerned. Are there alternatives?
Yeah. I mean, some plant depends on the oil, like the constituents that make up a plant. They need to be extracted in alcohol because a water or glycerin extraction won't do it. It's not strong enough.
Yeah, I told a patient once who was, she was in AA, she was very adamant about not being having any alcohol. And I said, well, you know, if you put it in hot water, my impression is the alcohol evaporates and there's very little residual, but, you know.
No, you're 100% right. I mean, what I always tell people to do is if you're adverse to alcohol and you want the herbs that are in a tincture, then boil some water, pour it into a cup, even like a half a cup. So you've got the boiling water in a cup, put your tincture drops in there. And by the time the water comes down to about room temperature, the alcohol will be dissipated out. And it doesn't disturb any of the properties of the plant. Because once it's extracted, it's preserved, and then you're just simply removing the alcohol. It's super easy, super easy.
There's a whole category of things under the rubric of mushrooms and fungi. And it's very intriguing because it crosses, it cuts across a lot of functionalities. There's a lot about immunity. There's also about, you know, cardiovascular prevention. There's even some implications for cancer. And then there's brain health with things like the
lion's mane.
Lion's mane, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I love mushrooms. So we only have the one mushroom in the book. And then, well, there's two because in the sacred plants and psychedelics, I did add magic mushrooms, psilocybin, but I don't add any, preparation or dosing in that section because it's got its own separate foreword because I think that there needs to be facilitation. There needs to be education. There's a reason they're sacred plants, but, things like, you know, turkey tail, it's really, really been studied for the last 50 years on what it does for cancer.
Is it versicolor? Versicolor?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's actually gaining a lot of popularity the last probably 5 or 10 years. Same with lion's mane. I mean, lion's mane
big time.
You know, it stimulates nerve growth factor in your brain. I mean, it's something I take every day, and the age I am, like, that's literally a no-brainer.
Right.
to take something like lion's mane.
For situations like menopause or even chemo brain, I think it's highly indicated to take that.
Agreed. Yes. And how wonderful. Like how wonderful that, you know, and I think it's a demand. I think people are starting to say, you know, hey, well, I'm starting to research. And this is what I love about access to information is, and of course, people need to use discernment. You know, you don't want to believe everything you see online and you want to common sense, discernment. This, I do love that people at least are asking questions.
Yeah, I just want to point out that another wonderful resource in this area is ABC, the American Botanical Council. And I presume you know Mark Blumenthal, who's an old friend of mine, a former New Yorker who, you know, has migrated west like many New Yorkers. But Mark has really been the impetus for a more scientific approach, a more rigorous approach to studying herbal medicine, and has created a wonderful resource, the Herbalgram, where people can learn more about that. So I just want to point out.
Yeah, I'm familiar with him, but I don't know him personally. But yes, I'm familiar with him. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
So when it comes to digestive health, you know, this is a really big category, and you list several herbs under that functionality. Among them are things like demulcents. I kind of like that word, a demulcent. And, you know, there are many medications used for GI problems. Most of them are follow the rubric of acid blockers. They block the acid. But I don't think there's much in the conventional armamentarium that compares to a effective demulcent. Can you talk about what those do?
Yeah, I mean, our digestive health is so freaking important. I mean, everything that your body gets that gets the benefit from the nutrients depends on digestion. And I think that there's so many toxins in the water, in the air, in the foods that we eat even, and our stress levels add all to our body's inability to digest. And I really believe it's super, super simple. Two of my absolute favorites for digestion are the simple, humble little herb of cayenne pepper.
Wow.
You know, cayenne pepper.
It's kind of counterintuitive because, you know, you have digestive problems, you're supposed to avoid like spicy food, right?
Yeah, but that's not true. That's so not true. In fact, here's an interesting thing. And I have close family members, siblings who have had experience with this, but a cayenne pepper will go into the stomach. And if there's an ulcer there, it will actually help heal an ulcer.
True.
And that seems counterintuitive. Like you said, it's like, well, isn't that going to hurt it? Isn't that going to make it burn? Isn't that going to, but quite the opposite. So and it's also a vasodilator. So good for your veins and your heart and your, you know, and all of those things help of course, if all this is working well, your digestion can work well. But, you know, things like chonka piedra is good for your gallbladder. You also have some liver loving properties. So if you've got your gallbladder working, your liver
I think
working,
the literal translation is breaker of stones. So some people use it for kidney stones. I'm not sure
That's
it
right.
works for kidney stones, but
I've seen it.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah. And it tends to more soften them and help them be easier to pass.
Okay.
For kidneys. I have a brother-in-law who's suffered for kidney stones. Took him 20 years to finally say, okay, I'll do some herbs. And he had amazing results with the chocolate piedra.
So coming to this theme of demulcents, I think marshmallow is one of the demulcents.
Yeah.
I think comfrey has a demulcent effect, but I think you have to be, there's some cautions on taking comfrey because too long is problematic for the liver, I think. Something like that.
Yeah, that's totally true. In fact, what I love about, I mean, comfrey, we're just going to stop on there for 2 seconds, is comfrey is known as bone mender. So it's got
bone
a lot
set.
Of rich use in making a poultice. You know, we used to have a huge comfrey plant outside of our front door when I was growing up. And I had two brothers who both broke arms when they were growing up, and they did go get the bone set. But then my dad made a comfrey poultice and was able to actually, that we're healing the bone quicker because, all the things we would watch all this happen, but comfrey is also good for digestion as well.
I'm currently watching House of the Dragon, and one of the characters, Prince Aegon, apparently had a dragon accident, a near-fatal encounter with a dragon. And so this is all in some mythical time before time where they seem to be in a medieval-like setting, and they're applying all kinds of poultices to him, and somehow they've and I'm thinking maybe they applied some comfrey to his wounds. But there are some things that you put in the book that are actually not designed for internal consumption, but external application because they're good for sores and wounds. And, clearly this comes from the wisdom accumulated over millennia by Native Americans and many cultures across the world because there were people, usually designated like you within the tribe who you would go to if there was a problem.
100%. In fact, in the last chapter of the book, it's a preparation section. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is from my dad's original book because a lot of these things don't change, but there's a whole little page on old time poultice recipes.
Wow.
So you can take different herbs and then put the different, different oils or butters or different things to actually make a poultice. And it shows you how to make them. And it's actually a really cool section because it's how do you make a decoction? How do you make a tincture? How do you make an herb infused oil? How do you make a poultice? There's also a field guide. I'm a big hiker. I live in Utah where there's mountains everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And there's plants out there, if you know how to identify them, that you can use in an emergency situation out in the field, like for a toothache or a bee sting or mostly I've used it for bee stings or spider bites only one time on a friend for spider or a snake bite, which was scary, but yeah, good.
I noticed an unusual inclusion in your book, which is the herb pennyroyal. Aside from the Nirvana song, pennyroyal tea, pennyroyal's got kind of a bad rap. It's kind of toxic. It is an abortificant. Not to be recommended. I don't think you should take that instead of the morning after pill. But there's some utility of pennyroyal. You actually suggest that it be an ingredient in a dog shampoo for fleas and ticks.
Yeah, that came from my dad. That was in his original book. But pennyroyal also, this is where the amounts are really important. You can't just go, this is good. Because pennyroyal actually is well known for women's issues and not just to facilitate an abortion, which sounds horrific, but there's amounts. There's such deep wisdom in herbal medicine because you can't just go, this is good for this. I read this is good for this, and then you just take it every day, and you don't pay attention to the amounts that you take, because there are plants like this is a plant that's not in the book, but there's a plant called bloodroot. Which has a lot of amazing anti-cancer properties. And in the right amount, in the right context, I've seen bloodroot do amazing things, not just topically.
For skin cancers, it's been recommended. Yeah.
Skin cancers and a black salve. My dad had a recipe for black salve that me and my siblings use. We don't make it or sell it for anybody, but it's something.
I noticed you're very light skinned and you grew up in a very sunny part of the country. So
yeah.
It may be that the legacy of sun exposure has caught up to you.
I have a lot of, I don't wear sunscreen unless it's something like zinc based or mineral based. And I also, at this point, I cover. I have these light covers so I can protect myself from sun. But I have siblings and even on myself, I've used this topical salve with bloodroot in it. And for any like suspicious spots or suspicious moles. But again, this, and I know people who actually use bloodroot internally as well, but in the tiniest amount, and it can work in sync with other herbs. In fact, are you familiar with the formula called Essiac?
Indeed.
Or Easiac?
Yes. Yes, very much so.
So in the late 1960s, my dad worked with Rene Casey or Rene Case. And to the traditional four herbs that were in her formula, he added bloodroot and watercress. And there's a tincture we may actually make of Essiac that has six herbs in it because he added those two. But the bloodroot is extremely small.
Mm-hmm.
But then you blend it with sheep sorrel and the astragalus and the other herbs that are in it, and it's perfection. So
I didn't know that your father was associated with the famous Rene Case, or however you pronounce her name, French-Canadian herbalist, who made, Essiac and Essiac tea, actually still is on the radar screen as a natural cancer adjunct.
100 years later.
Yeah.
It's been 100 years now,
Indeed.
Yeah, he worked with Hulda Clark, Dr. Hulda Clark. He worked with Dr. E.T. Krebs. He worked with some really amazing, and he was just this humble botanist from Idaho, just this amazing human being who was very prolific in his throwing children out into the world with my mom.
Very prolific indeed. What, 11 of his own and three at home.
Yeah.
So a big theme these days is immunity. We want to support immunity. I think a lot of the popular formulas these days incorporate mushrooms, things like shiitake, and as you mentioned, turkey tail, and versicolor. But there are plants that work on immunity. We mentioned echinacea. Any other favorites? I think astragalus is also in your book, right?
Astragalus is good. There's a lot of herbs that actually provide immunity. It's one of those things like what you said earlier, where you can, it's not just this one specific thing that an herb does. It has a wide variety. For me, immunity is actually a little bit more complex and yet simple than just taking a certain herb or certain rotating herbs. I think your immunity becomes stronger when you pay attention to the lifestyle things, when you keep your stress low, when you exercise, when you meditate, when you separate from your technology, you don't scroll social media. To me, that's where your immune system stays strong. You get good sleep. You have strong, good relationships. Then your immune system is like, it just stays strong. And if you need to add an herb during maybe high risk season, like, getting on a plane, there's little herbal remedy things I do that keep my immune system strong when I'm traveling because I don't want to pick up something on a plane. But other than that, I don't just take something for immunity.
You have a whole section on female problems. There actually are herbs that ease the difficulties of PMS and menstrual pain. What are some of those that you favor?
Black cohosh and even blue cohosh are some of my favorites. And believe it or not, pennyroyal is in there as well. Those are probably squavine is also very good for female issues. I think it's, it depends on the woman and what she's doing.
It has to be individualized.
It does. And I really like this, where I like to bring adaptogens in, not just, because they help to balance all that out too.
Is Chase Berry on your list of favorites?
It is, actually.
Mm-hmm. Is it Vitex? Is it
because Vitex? Yes, yeah. It is. It's Vitex.
Mm-hmm. So just from a standpoint of terminology, let's talk a little bit about, you know, there's popular names and there's botanical names. Can you go into that a little bit? Because you explain it in the book.
Yeah, well, I think, there's common names and there's Latin names and there's scientific names. So it depends on the species. It depends on, like, for example, when we talked about Lomatium, there's the species that we use is Lomatium dissectum, and then the variation is called multipeta. But there are about 13 different types of Lomatium.
Wow.
So one is just Lomatium dissectum. One is Lomatium clarkii, which is C-L-A-R-K-I-I. So basically, if you want the antiviral, antimicrobial properties of Lomatium, that's too broad. So what happens with scientific names and Latin name, with any plant that you get, you're narrowing it down to a species that contains those particular medicinal properties. So this is why it's very important, like Echinacea or Echinacea purpurea is one of the Echinacea. And there's one Echinacea
angustifolia. Right. Yeah.
Yes. So there are different species. Actually, those are both good for immune. Both those species are very good. So I think that this is where what I really wanted to try to do in the book is, without making it this big, thick, hard to read textbook, which you can get those if you're interested and you can delve into that. But I wanted to make this as layperson as possible with the right terms. You know, so like here's the plan, the common names, the botanical name, the Latin names, so that you can really kind of get it, so you can get educated and feel empowered, but also educated. So I think that's probably the biggest thing for people to realize.
What about for your home garden or even on your windowsill? You know, there's some culinary herbs that you talk about.
Yes,
and the culinary herbs, you know, both add, impart flavor to food, but they also have properties. So give us maybe, you know, your favorite, you know, half dozen that people can put on their windowsill in the kitchen or, you know, perhaps in, you know, if they're a little more ambitious in their garden, that will enhance their health.
Yeah, I love this. I love this because to me, this makes it really super simple because you're basically looking at food. So my number one favorite that anyone can do because you can easily get a little pot of it is basil. And it's just like the basil that you can get, like sweet basil. So this is different than holy basil. This is basil that you would put on a caprese salad or, you know, whatever. But the nice thing about spices like basil, rosemary, thyme, oleander, which is amazing, and it's not oleander, it's actually or culantro, not cilantro, it's culantro. Both of them are in the book, so you'll be able to read about them. But the thing is, this is the best place for people to start. That's why I included so many herbs or spices that people cook with, because if you can actually just start realizing, oh, I'm adding help by adding this to my food, then it becomes less intimidating. And to me, anybody, no matter where you live, if you live in an apartment and you have a windowsill, you can grow a couple of herbs in your house. But here's the thing, and this is really, really, really important. If you have a spice cabinet, say with dried spices like cloves or cinnamon, and they're going to still add flavor to your food. But the shelf life where their medicinal properties are viable is very short.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have...
That's where I'm very remiss. I've got, you know, and I just hate to throw stuff out, but frankly, you know, when the stuff is so desiccated, I'm really not sure there's anything but a little vestige of flavor left.
And that's the thing. So I think if you're going to do spices and you're going to do powdered spices, then buy tiny little things, but also keep in mind... You might buy something fresh at the store and you don't know how long it sat in the warehouse before it arrived at the grocery store. So by the time you get it, even if it says it's just barely fresh, it's probably missing all of its medicinal properties.
They irradiate that stuff, by the way. So they which may enhance shelf life, but it may also vitiate the medicinal properties.
100%. You're spot on. And this is where I think if you can start getting in the habit of having fresh herb to just simply pull a leaf or two off of your basil plant and nurture it a little bit and give it love and let it just thrive in your kitchen window, you've always got access to something that not only tastes good, but is so freaking good for you.
I need to up my game because I think I'm getting a C- in that regard. So, I will do that. Although we did start a little modest herbal garden, got the kids and the family to dig in the dirt, and they had a little project. So we now have some fresh herbs. And by the way, that great family opportunity, because there's nothing that encourages kids to try foods than having them participate in growing them and having some skin in the game when it comes to food preparation. So that
Not only that, it actually teaches them where your food comes from.
Yes.
Because I think we're so disconnected from our food source. You know, when we were growing up, my parents had chicken, and we used to watch or help participate in chopping the head off a chicken to have for dinner.
Yeah.
And it really changes the way that you look at the food you eat. In fact, have you read Omnivore's Dilemma, Michael Pollan?
I have, yes. Yeah.
It's you know, that was a great book because I was like, oh, this reminds me of my childhood, where you get to really realize when you get to that third meal, like, it changes not only the food, you get a different appreciation and a gratitude. So I love that about teaching kids.
Yeah, you know, not having a farm of my own, we've had to resort to sending the kids to farm camp this summer for their education.
Perfect.
But they get to see the animals, they get to see, you know, the food being prepared and the crops being grown. And I think that's a very, very important experience for especially urban kids. All right.
Agreed. My husband's brother lives in Manhattan, and he raised three boys there. They're all in college now, but I agree. They did the same. They would send them out to learn into farm camp.
Indeed. Okay. Yeah. Well, we had a wonderful, wide-ranging discussion. The book has really prompted a great discussion of something that I think is a very, very important component of health, which is proper utilization of plants and herbal medicine. But just even ordinary culinary application. And you'll find all that in this wonderful book. And I'm just, you know, opening it up here and marveling at just the great pictures. You had a great photographer, so kudos to you.
Thank you.
And again, I think I recommend it very highly. It's a wonderful addition to your intelligent medicine library. So the book is Be Your Own Shaman, a field guide to utilize 94 of the world's most healing plants. And you have a website, Jane?
Yeah, so it's barlowherbal.com. And you can actually get the book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
And the formulas that you talk about, you say you have created a line of formulas. They're available via barlowherbal.com.
Yeah. I 4 years after my dad passed, I restarted his company and brought back his formulas. And in the 22 years that I've been going on my own, I've formulated some of my own. And with my knowledge and my own, just the childhood I had and the experience from my dad.
What are some of the best sellers in that line?
Well, so I formulated a precursor to the Lomation tincture to help mitigate the chances of the detox rash. And that was about 17 years ago that I formulated that.
Interesting.
Okay. What I find is when we support and detox the liver, we give it some good nourishment, that we're able to prevent the rash. And now you take this formula, we call it Immunity Boost, and you take this formula, it's got some Lomation in it, so you're acclimating your body to it before you start on the pure Lomation, and it takes it down to only about 3%. So instead of 10% of the people, so this is one of the first that I formulated, and it's now a staple. You know, people go to it because it has so many, it's got seven herbs in it. It's just beautiful. So, and I've got a lung blend with the osha, the mullein, the lobelia. So I got some beautiful, beautiful, fun stuff.
Something you might want to include in your medicine cabinet. Okay. So great. Thank you so much. I've had a great time talking to you. And I really commend you on your work and also keeping alive the tradition of your dad. I think the book is a great tribute to his work. And also, I think it modernizes it and puts it in a context that is very user-friendly and not just an esoteric manual for herbal enthusiasts and professionals.
So, thank you. Thank you. It's been so lovely to talk to you. I can tell we're extremely like-minded.
Indeed. We're kindred spirits.
Thanks, Jane, for joining us. That was Jane Barlow Christensen. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.